drive, and far side shot, scores! Mark Savard! The Boston Bruins are back in it!
He's made, going in on goal, he shoots, he scores! Tays up with Pavlat around. Go right on the right to the goal. He scores! A spectacular goal by 20-year-old Jonathan Tays. You won't see any better than that.
Gabrick moves in. He scores! Marion Gabrick steps it home.
Here's Van Riemsdyk. Off the wall with it. Backhander, he scores! There's your answer. James Van Riemsdyk. To the outside, takes his own pass. Marchand along in front, score!
And now it's time for the Blue Line on WSHS Sterling High School Radio with your host Rob Strauss and John Flacco.
Enough is enough. Start playing with some jam in here. Let's go.
And welcome back to another edition of the Blue Line, the first one of the season. A little bit longer than we thought it was going to be between our last episode and this episode. But nonetheless, back listening to the Blue Line right here at WSHS Sterling High School Radio, Rob Strauss alongside John Flacco. And John, it's a long time coming, but finally we have hockey back, coming back this coming weekend starting Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it's nice to have hockey back. There's no way I thought that we'd be this long without talking about hockey. We both said at the end there that we thought that they would get this done in the last second to save the season. But
Were we wrong?
Did, but it's a 48-game season, not a full season, 82-game season.
What a disaster this whole thing had become. And, you know, you have all summer to get this deal done. And I'm probably going to get really – the more I talk about it, now that we still have it, we have a season now, and I'm still fired up about it. They had all summer to get a deal done. They don't get the deal done. September 14th at midnight expires, and then all of a sudden the influx of players starts going overseas to start getting their paychecks overseas. And I think more importantly, keeping their legs about them, staying in good hockey shape, but I think more importantly for a paycheck. But months go by, you meet for 2 hours a week, and that's no good. And then you take 2 weeks off, you come back, you meet for a couple weeks or for a couple hours. Still nothing got done, and then finally it bleeds into January. You lose the Winter Classic.
Yeah, I don't see how – I think hiring Donald Fear was a good move on the Players Association's part, but they should have did it the last contract and got these things ironed out so they wouldn't be – forced to this position against the owners. And I think there's a lot of blame to go around on both sides, sort of a disconnect. But I think a lot of this has to do with the has and has nots in the National Hockey League. And, the two sides, the big market teams and the small market teams are both kind of trying to figure out a way to make it worth for both of them. And that case kind of just screwing it for the players. And I think Fear kind of took the players aside before and said, this is what we're going to do and we're not going to give up. And I don't know if they achieved what they wanted to achieve, but
I think the thing is now, like, where do you point the blame? I mean, I think it's an equal 50-50 share of owners and players. And somebody said this to me, and I think it really rings true to me anyway, is it's billionaires, owners fighting with millionaires, players. And to me, In a sport where, at least in this country, where you have hockey viewability or viewership, for lack of a better word, is easily seventh or eighth on the list of watchable U.S. sports in this country. In my opinion, it goes football, one, clear cut, far and away. Baseball and basketball, depending on what city you live in, or the 2-3 combo. 4, you could arguably say college football, 5, college basketball, 6, what am I leaving out?
Soccer?
I mean, I guess you could. Golf?
Maybe golf. I would go golf before I go.
Hockey's somewhere down around 6 or 7, in my opinion. Unfortunately, I mean, everybody who listens to the show and everybody who knows me knows that I'm a big hockey nut. But unfortunately, in this country where 75% of the NHL teams reside, hockey isn't that still that big up on the watchability scale. And I think this is something that they needed to get done beforehand to avoid exactly what they went through for the last 4.5 months. And it's a shame.
Yeah, I think hockey kind of lives in, I mean, the background of people in hockey are mostly North American, Canadian, or upper northern United States. And
north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Exactly.
Right.
And they kind of, that's their background. So when they look at things from that perspective, not looking at the sort of the global hockey look. And hockey has become a global sport. We have so many foreign players in the league. You know, you go back to the 70s, the last time the Flyers won. You didn't have any foreign players, very, very few, maybe
right.
a Finn or a Swede here or there, and that was about it. But I think they're really myopic and not looking at, you know, the global implications. I mean, L.A. is a perfect example. You got a team in a city that where, you know, they care nothing about any of their sports, and, you know, you got people on board.
You've got
in
the
Los
Lakers.
Angeles.
You got the Lakers.
Outside of the Lakers.
Outside of the Lakers, and now predominantly the Clippers are really starting to come in.
But
the Lakers
for the average basketball fan, they're not going to Lakers games because it costs, you know, $3,000 to sit on the floor at a Lakers game because you have to sit next to a celebrity. So, you know, unless you go to Clippers game, although the Clippers are good now, too. So
right.
I guess
it's almost
just
like
much.
They flip-flopped almost the two teams, but that's another story for another show. I want to know what took so long and why it took so long. I mean, I think the owners and the players really needed to realize where they stand. This is the third NHL strike in the last 18 years under Gary Bettman. And one of the – actually, two of the three resulted in a shortened season. One, back in 2003-04, you lost the entire season altogether. Now, granted, they came back out of that season and made some rule changes, and there was obviously a big separation between the owners and players back at that point, but they came back and they made the changes that they needed to make to the bigger blue line, the no more two-line offside pass, and I think they made good changes for the game. Now, this time around, you're not making any changes to the game other than to the point where it's affecting either the salary cap or to the owners and the players. For me, personally, them putting a logo on the ice that says, thank you, fans, is not good enough to win me back 100%.
No, I think you're going to have to see more of an outreach with teams to communities. And you know, it's hard for us here because Ed Snyder does just such a good job with youth hockey and sponsors so many teams. And, you know, I can speak personally. I have a friend whose son is he has MS, but he plays on one of the sled teams.
Sure. Yep.
And those things are fully funded by Ed Snyder. They don't pay a dime for him to play on that team. I mean, it's truly a privilege, you know, to be a part of that team. And the people who run that organization are just top-notch, honest to goodness, great people. And you know, my buddy's son, he's in high school, and he was born in Russia. He was orphaned in Russia. He was adopted by a friend of mine. They took him back here, and you know, he's been Americanized, going through public school, and this is his outlet. You know, he can't run, he can't play baseball, he can't play soccer, but he has an opportunity to play, you know, a really expensive sport,
sure,
too, that he
sure
would never have the opportunity to play. And like I said, those types of programs that most people don't know about, to be honest with you. I never heard of the sled hockey team before that. But it's been publicized. Snyder has these outreach for the city rinks and these public hockey teams that they sponsor. And those are the kinds of things that aren't probably being done in, you know,
other cities.
Not in the big cities.
Nashville and
right
places like that. But I just want to know how the fans are going to react. Not as much in Canada, because we know that they're probably just bubbling over with excitement that hockey's finally back, although they had four different leagues that were probably on air that they could choose from between
right
the Quebec Junior Majors, the OHL, the AHL. But for the fans, what is the effect going to be on the fans, both the diehard fans like myself and yourself, John, and also the casual fan that goes to maybe a handful of games a year and maybe watches the Flyers when they're in the playoffs?
Right.
What's the fallout going
to
be?
You're going to lose casual fans. Go back to Los Angeles. Those casual fans that you pulled in with that run on that team, the beginning of this year was your chance to hook them in and get those people coming back to buy 5-10 game plans to come to games and, you know, buy jerseys and stuff like that. Well, now you just, you know, they're out of the championship might have been 2 years, 3 years ago now because it's been so long that they played. You're not going to get those people back. And then you have, like, clubs like Phoenix. You don't even know who the owner of that organization is.
Yeah.
How do you get people to come to that arena?
I think it's a public relations nightmare. I think they're kind of in a state of emergency, the NHL and the respective clubs, trying to come up with something to get these fans back. You don't see football going on strike three times in 18 years. You don't see baseball going on strike three times in 18 years. Baseball has a hard enough time trying to keep their reputation clean as it is with all the PEDs and all this other stuff. That's a whole other mess in and of itself. Hockey just has a problem keeping fans, U.S. fans, on board.
Yeah.
And I think with this, really set them back. They may have taken, over the last 8 years during the old CBA, may have taken three steps forward, but I think they took five, six steps backwards because of this strike.
After the full season out, I mean, they lost. They lost. I mean, they were arguably one of the top four sports before that year-long lockout.
You had some good rivalries in there too. Detroit, Colorado in the mid-90s was a great matchup.
And then
New Jersey, anybody during that time.
They were just starting to get back and kind of move back into the U.S. mainstream.
They had the glowing puck, for crying out loud, on Fox.
What a disaster
right? Oh, my God.
But, and then any momentum you had, or as long as it took, is now lost. And they basically got to start over again. And, you know, can they really change the game again to get people back? Well, they already tried changing it, and that didn't really help. I think it's better that they kind of tried to outlaw the lock and the left wing lock and make games more high scoring to try to get people to watch. But that's not enough. You got to make the game has to be more global. It has to be, you know, people in outside our country watch the Super Bowl.
Yep.
I don't think anybody outside North America is watching the NHL finals.
Except for us.
Right.
I thought they were great finals, and we didn't get a chance to talk because school was over.
Right.
We didn't get a chance to our last podcast with Flyers radio play-by-play announcer Tim Saunders, who's, I'm sure he's thrilled that he's getting back into the NHL, although we did do some AHL games up in Adirondack with the Phantoms.
And Mike Emmerich did a 10-year-old game.
Yeah.
In Minnesota?
You know, and that brings up a very good point, because I think the people that really lose out on this whole thing, obviously the fans are losing out. Selfishly, I was upset, and I'm sure you were as well, John, that we didn't get to see hockey in the beginning of October. You know what I mean?
And for those who don't know, Mr. Strauss missed out on the Winter Classic to watch his home team
this year. That's a whole
other
thing.
Hopefully he'll get the chance next year to do that. They'll run it back, but that's to be determined.
Them losing the Winter Classic, just to get off on a tangent, them losing the Winter Classic at a venue like the Big House in Michigan that seats 110,000 people, do the math on the number of tickets that you could sell, times the amount, the cost per ticket, not to mention the custom jerseys and all this. They dropped the ball on that. That has become their saving grace.
But that's one of the things they were doing to pull more people in. That was a great idea. It was still the game. It wasn't real gimmicky. I mean, it was a little gimmicky, but not over-the-top gimmicky.
It almost became a tradition on New Year's Day.
It was becoming, and that was a pull for people, you know, even for casual fans, because people are home on New Year's Day. Right, they're not out. They're off from work, so they can watch something like that. And you know, the snow the first year it happened. I mean,
the one up in Buffalo
all the people
was
talked
unbelievable.
About.
That one the first year they did.
Now you lost it again.
And it's a shame. And I think the real people who missed out on this, other than the fans and the Winter Classic, and selfishly, obviously, I'm upset about it. But I think the people that really missed out on this. How about the concession people? The people that sell the tickets, work the stadium, the security guards, and all the people that make their living or rely on that extra money, that extra income, to maybe pay some bills or put their kids through school or do, you know, what has that extra spending?
Christmas time,
whatever,
buying his presents,
whatever. Right? I mean, that's a big chunk of change. I mean, you've lost 32 games roughly out of the season. Let's just say you lose half of those games.
That's right.
15, 16 games roughly. Times whatever you'd make per hour, you could do the math on that. That's a lot of money that those people are missing out on. Now the owners and the players, they have their money. I think they were kind of stockpiling it like squirrels getting ready for the winter. But these people relied on that, and I don't think that was really taken. It shouldn't have been taken into consideration because it's an owners versus players matchup, and both teams are trying to make a state or both ends are trying to make a statement. I get that, but I think lost in the shuffle are those people that lost that income.
Yeah, and I mean, people in Philadelphia, luckily, we still have a venue where events are going on. Granted, not as many with their regular season, but at least they have a job. What about those arenas where, you know, the Igloo, it's hockey only in that arena, right? Those people are only working hockey games.
Yeah.
And if they're not playing hockey, they're not working.
And last thing I want to ask you, John, before we get off to our first break, what is your stance? I've talked to a lot of people about this. A lot of people have been talking about me. You know, what is your plan for the NHL lockout? Are you excited that hockey's back? Where are you in terms of, are you going to games this year? Are you not going to games this year? Are you going to buy the NHL package to watch all the games? Or what should the NHL do to win the fans back?
Well, I think for me personally, I mean, it's kind of hard for me to stay away. I'm a four-sport Philly guy. I always have been. Hockey's my number one. I still want to see the team win a championship. So for me to turn completely away is never going to happen. That's not realistic for me. Will I go to games? Probably not, you know, unless, you know, someone offers to take me to a game. I'm definitely not going to buy a ticket this year. Will I buy merchandise? Well, might not this year. I might stay away from it this year. To see how things go, you know, to see what the commitment is, see how the leak turns out. I find it with hockey, it's tough for me because that's my favorite. If it was another, like when baseball went out on strike at that time, I stayed away from baseball for a while.
Right.
I mean, it's not my favorite. I don't sit there and watch every game. I like the Phillies, but I won't go watch an outside baseball game on my free time. I'll watch a hockey game normally. Maybe I definitely won't, you know, I won't buy the package. Now, maybe the NHL might offer me a really reduced rate for the package for the rest of the season.
But they're going to have to. There's only 50 games in the season.
They're going to have to say the price per game compared to a full season.
Right.
That's going to have to be dramatically less. If they're going to choke that off as a loss, and let's say, let's just throw it out there at some ridiculous low price to entice people to,
like, $175 for a full season. Maybe they throw it to you for $75.
Yeah, I mean
the NHL eats some of that cost of, you know, back
they
to
would
the
have to do something.
They'd have
like
to
that.
Do something like that. But I'm kind of in the same boat as you, John. I'm not going to pay for a ticket to go to a game. Go out of my way, even if my favorite Toronto comes to town and it's a big game. And unless somebody says, "Hey, I have this extra ticket, I'm not going to use it. Do you want to go?" I'm going to say how much, and they're going to say, "Don't worry about it. I just want somebody to go." Then I'll take it.
Right.
This is kind of my way of sticking it to the NHL. Me and my 0.0001% of their annual revenue income between merchandise and ticket sales and all that stuff. But I'm kind of hurt as a fan, as a diehard fan. I feel hurt, and I feel kind of slighted by that. And I think the NHL has a really, really big public relations nightmare on their hands, and they got a lot of work to do, and they've done it before, and I'm not saying that I'm totally going to rule them out entirely. I love the sport too much to just shut it off and tell you. You can't tell me that at 3:00 on NBC, I'm not going to be like, "Well, there's the Penguins and Flyers game. I'm just going to skip past that because I'm mad." No, I'm going to watch it.
Right.
I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen too is you're just going to find that the league is going to suffer because the low end of all these people doing that is just going to just turn away.
Right. Yep. And that's going to get off to – that's going to wrap up for this part of the first period, the NHL lockout period. When we get back from our first break, second period action, going to talk some notable offseason moves both from the free agency and also some trades that have been kind of flying quite a bit back and forth as of late. Some happened – towards the end of the regular season, or towards the end of the playoffs, right after the end of the playoffs, and then more so recently, and also some training camp updates. You're listening to The Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. We're back with second period action right after this.
Come join the local youth every Sunday night at Stratford United Methodist Church on the corner of Union and Central Avs. The youth group is a rapidly growing group, and they would love to have you. The group consists of 7th to 12th graders and meets every Sunday night from 7 to 9 at the church. Come join us weekly for crazy games, live music, biblical life lessons, and some great snacks. Join now so you don't miss out on upcoming camping trips, scavenger hunts, swim parties, and more. For more information, contact Stratford Church at 784-9135. Or Jared Claiborne at 856-287-0717.
Do you play an instrument but don't get enough practice time? Do you want to learn how to play an instrument? Then join the Sterling High School Concert Band. They're in dire need of low brass and saxophone players. However, everybody is welcome to join. It is a great character-building experience and an even better way to experience music in a new light. They perform several times a year, including a winter concert in December, a spring concert in May, and they take various trips throughout the year performing for the community. Rehearsals take place during Zero Block and Access every day. For more information, please see Mr. Steve Goldeck in the band room or contact your guidance counselor. This message has been brought to you by Sterling High School Concert Band and WSHS Sterling High School Radio.
Love the thrill of watching sports, keeping stats, broadcasting live events? If so, WSHS Sterling High School Radio is looking for student sports directors. As a student sports director, you will get to learn to keep stats and records, help set up broadcast live events while getting a great view of the game. Students will also record and edit sports promos to be aired on WSHS. For more information, stop by room 402 or contact station manager Rob Strauss at wshs.radio@gmail.com. Sterling High School Radio, the exclusive home for live coverage of Sterling Athletics.
Hi, this is Tim Saunders, radio voice of the Philadelphia Flyers. You're listening to The Blue Line right here on WSHS, Sterling High School Radio.
And welcome back to The Blue Line right here on WSHS, Sterling High School Radio. Second period action here, Rob Strauss alongside John Flacco. And just got through speaking about our NHL lockout. Now to switch tables a little bit, start talking about some notable offseason moves, and both in the via free agency and also via trade, and also some training camp updates. First and foremost, the big news that happened shortly after the Stanley Cup was hoisted by the LA Kings. The two big names on the market, Flyers were after both of them, and then both of them, and a shocker, Suter and Parise, both went to Minnesota in an absolutely ridiculous deal. I don't think anybody saw this one coming at all, and I know the Flyers were really big on Ryan Suter, and they signed him to an offer sheet, and then I'm thinking of Weber. Yes. But either way, I think they were after both of the Flyers were after both of these guys, trying to shore up their lines and whatnot. But this automatically makes Minnesota a huge contender.
I guess, especially in a season like this, where you don't know what's gonna happen. It's definitely gonna help them sell tickets. One of the problems I have with this whole deal is you got a team like Minnesota who's not a pull for free agents to begin with, haven't been a good team, and then they go and spend hundreds of millions of dollars on two players, and then 3 months later the owners are complaining about how they're not making money. And they lock out the league. All of these
contradictory.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I think we saw with Kovalchuk's deal that's not those long term deals just don't work out. They never work out the way they plan them to.
And you know what? I think it all started way back. This was years and years and years ago with Rick DiPietro, who signed that 15-year, $190 million, $200 million deal with the Islanders. And I think DiPietro was – he hasn't finished a full season since
– He hasn't
he
earned
signed that,
it 1 year over
absolutely
the contract.
Not. And I think he started that whole snowball of these long-term deals with this ridiculous amount of money. Minnesota's going to use a poker reference. They're going all in. And I can't knock them for a smaller market team, not like a Detroit, not a New York, not a Boston, not a Washington, not a Philadelphia. They're going after it. And I can't knock them for it. It's a gutsy move.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to change the dynamic. They're automatically contenders. Whether or not they have enough young talent on that team to put it together in that short a time, I think... Well, I guess the window is pretty open since you'd signed those guys to both the really long-term deals. So, I don't know. Who knows?
Next big deal, Rick Nash was the other highly touted free agent. He signs traded to the Rangers for Brandon Dubinsky, Anisimov, Erickson, who's a defenseman, and a first-round pick in 2013. So the Rangers, who were a couple games away from going to their first Stanley Cup final since 94, will be in very, very big contention in the East, as they had a very, very strong squad last year, far and away better than really anybody in the East regular season-wise. But now they are even better. They have the goaltending. They have arguably an okay defense, but now their forwards are just really, really strong, and that's to me, the team to beat in the East.
Yeah, as a Flyers fan, the signing of Nash was a bigger backbreaker than them not getting Weber or Parise. In fact, I don't know how hard they really pursued Parise. I think they kind of got caught up in that once Weber signed that big deal. But having to play against Nash, especially in this season now where there's no outside games, everything is in conference, seeing the mixes. Well, you know, the record against the Rangers last year, did we win one game?
No.
We were 0-for.
0-for.
0-for the season. Even when it meant nothing, we still couldn't beat them. Unless Lundqvist somehow isn't playing against them this year, with Rick Nash, it's that much. I mean, the guys who are missing are not making the difference against the Flyers. Although we did take one of theirs, so I don't know how much.
Oh, you got Rusty Fedotenko. You got Rusty back.
Rusty's back on the Flyboys.
But look at it. I mean, you look at their lineup. They have Brad Richards. I almost said Mike Richards. That's Flyers West.
We don't want to go there.
That's the ex-Flyer report. That's last year's news. Marian Gaborik and now Rick Nash.
And Gaborik turned last season around, had a
slow start.
Slow start, but really overall had a decent season. And, we were talking to you, said one of the things we were going to talk about was awards at the end of the prediction for awards. And I was looking at Gaborik thinking about him for points and goals again this year. But now, you know, remember Nash is going to be there too. They got to spread that puck around. So he's a force. He's that the kind of difference maker. When Richards can't be that guy, Nash can be that guy. When Nash can't be that guy, you know, their captain can be that guy. And that's a tough lineup to play against. They can stay strong. Yeah.
And if they can stay healthy, and I think that's going to be a big key for all of the teams this year, staying healthy, because you're playing a shortened season. You're not getting the 1 week. You're only getting one week of training camp. Now, several players went overseas to play, whether it's to make extra money or if it's to stay in shape, who knows. But you can off-season workout as much as you want, but if you're not playing
you're
not in game shape. And I don't think that all the teams aren't really going to be in game shape, I think, until at least March. And I think that the teams that will win and go deep in the playoffs are the teams that get hot around them towards the end of regular season.
Yeah.
Games 40 through 50.
I think the team that wins is it could be anybody this year.
It really can.
Given that scenario.
And the scenario, I kind of like it a little bit, as angry as I am with the whole strike. 50-game season. Some people argue that 82 games is too many games and all this other stuff. Now you're looking at a 50-game season. Each game means so much more now. You can't go on a 4 or 5-game, 6-game slide.
Yeah.
And still, you go on a 6-game slide, you might as well just start you know, unloading your free agents and start, you know, trying to look ahead to next year. That's the only good thing that I think you can take out of this lockout, is it's a very NFL-like season where every single game matters.
And the Flyers don't have that holiday West Coast swing road trip that they have every year,
because they go one and seven. Yeah.
So now we're in conference. So I don't know what's as far west they travel in conference. I can't think of
the Eastern Conference. I think probably Winnipeg.
Oh, that's right, because Winnipeg is in the east now.
Yep,
yeah,
because Winnipeg's in the east, so that would probably be the furthest east. Or
so I think they'll only visit them once, though.
Yep. So once or twice at worst, probably twice.
But then you look at how many times they visit New York, New Jersey.
Well, you're just going to be traveling up
Boston, Pittsburgh, Washington.
It's an I-95 conference.
Yeah, and those games are just car trips.
Yeah, and so that I think that if anything good comes out of this, that'll be that. Speaking of car trips, the Stahl brothers reunited, similar to the Shen brothers, which we'll get to in a minute. But Jordan Stahl over at Pittsburgh, free agent, heads over to hang out with his brother. And that's now you've got the Stahl boys back together, and they're both in Carolina now. So now Carolina arguably could be another contender.
Yeah, I wouldn't sleep on Carolina. That move there, they got some youth there. I know they're trying to go with the goaltending is not shored up there right now. But if they can get decent goaltending, they can definitely be competitive. I think that the idea of brothers playing together in the NHL – really, I mean, look at the Sedins. I mean, it goes a long way.
They're beasts.
When you have somebody in there, you know you can depend on who's whatever in every aspect. When you go in the locker room, when you leave the locker room, that means a lot. You have somebody to travel with. You have you know who your roommate's going to be. You know, you have the same expectations,
right? And to round out some notable offseason moves, this is just came out today. Those are just a few of the many, many moves that were made. Those are some of the more notable moves, just to kind of bring everybody up to speed. Scott Gomez of the once a Devil, once a Ranger, and now a Montreal Canadian is going to sit out this season, and the Canadians are going to buy out his contract at the end of the season. So kind of a weird move by Scott Gomez.
That I think there's something else going on there.
Something's not right there.
And I also read somewhere that the league, the Players Union, was going to grieve that ruling about whether or not the Canadians can do that. I think they want to kind of force the issue and make him a free agent now.
And then they'll probably unload him.
And yeah, so they can get rid of him. He can go play somewhere. Because I can't imagine somebody...
He's too good of a player to sit out in the whole season.
I mean, I know he's not the player he was, but he's still a viable player, especially on a playoff team.
Montreal was so bad last year towards the end, that they just kind of tanked at the end of last season. But he's taking essentially a 3.5 month break. He's sitting out the season, meaning he's going to sit for the next 3 months. But we'll see how that unfolds.
But that age, you can't sit out that long and expect to come back and be competitive.
He'll land on a team. There's no doubt about that. Flyers, your hometown boys, Mr. Flacco. Flyers, they made an off-season splash, gaining the whole brothers tandem. They dealt JVR, a first-round draft pick from a number of years, I believe 07 or 08, one of those years back in the day, dealing Middletown, New Jersey native James Van Riemsdyk to the Toronto Maple Leafs for Luke Shen. So now you have Luke and Braden together on the same team, and a lot of people are saying that Braden Shen and Sean Couturier are going to have a bang up season this year for the Flyers.
Well, those guys have been playing, and I think when you look at the Flyers, you can tell that their defense was just so poor in the playoffs. That was a difference, and they were so top heavy with scoring and frontline players that it only made sense that you had to trade a viable frontline player if you wanted to get better on defense. And unfortunately for JVR, I think it's a money thing. It kind of just worked out that way. He was a young player who had value, who, you know, probably had injured at some points and probably would be looking to make a lot of money probably on his next contract. So he's the one that made the most sense, I guess. You don't want to trade your core players. Personally, I think Scott Hartnell would have had more trade value coming off the season that he did. But I think the Flyers are kind of married to Hartnell.
That was a move too by Burke, who just got fired last week of the GM in the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Maybe that's why.
Maybe that is one of the reasons why. They also did not land free agent still out there, the Roberto Luongo, say that five times fast. And they signed, the Canucks did, signed Corey Schneider to a three-year deal, who played very well towards the end of last season. And it, that whole they can't win in the playoffs thing kind of doomed them as the LA Kings. The Kings could have beaten anybody that year or last season because they were just playing so well, Jonathan Quick playing so well. But he's still out there. Luongo's still out there. I'm going to be happy with this trade as a Leafs fan. I will be happy when JVR records his 41st point. That's when I will say, okay, this was a pretty good deal. Luke Shen was, I guess, it was just a solid player for them. And I guess I don't know how this is going to – only time will tell how this deal pans out. But to me,
I think
being a Leafs fan, you're kind of getting damaged goods because JVR had that one good playoff season where nobody could stop him. He was on fire. And then last season, he spent most of the season hurt.
Yeah.
So – you know, damaged goods, maybe. We'll find out. Who knows?
Yeah, I think you find out with JVR is because of his size and style of play, he leaves himself more susceptible to injury. I think he's got to learn kind of how to play within himself to avoid those kind of injuries and you know, have a career. So, but he's a young guy. I think you can't look at him and say he's damaged goods in the long haul.
Based off of his last performance.
He has so many years ahead, good years ahead of him. I think in the long run, Toronto is going to make out in that deal. I don't see Luke Shen as a top-line defenseman on this team. I think he'll definitely improve this defense compared to what they had last year. But I don't see him making a significant difference.
And it wouldn't be a preseason Flyers conversation if we didn't talk about their goaltending. Sergei Bobrovsky, who was supposed to be the next Flyers goaltender, obviously didn't work out too well. He was traded to the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are reeling without the presence of Rick Nash. And he is dealt to the Columbus Blue Jackets for a bunch of draft picks, I believe.
Yeah, they pretty much gave him away.
And gave him away. And now so Bob is going to see what he can do out in Columbus. So now the Flyers are going. They're rolling the dice with Briz on his sophomore season here with the Flyers, and now you also have Leighton in the backup and the recently acquired
Bobby Boucher,
not to be confused with Brian Boucher, who was just, as you just said before we went on air here, was just waived by the Flyers.
Yeah, for people who know, Boucher is a local guy. He lives around here. His family's around here. I think he's one of those guys that likes to be part of the organization, looking to come back and finish here. I don't think you'll see him in uniform unless we have injury problems this year. The Flyers are stuck with Brizgalov. I don't think there's anything they can do.
Well, they signed him an eight-year deal.
I believe it was 8 years.
For a ridiculous amount of money?
For $51 million?
It was a lot. It was like $9 million a year or something like that, I believe he got.
And so they can't do anything with him because they can't unload him. So they figured, I guess the mode of thinking is, all right, let's commit to him. Let's get Bobrovsky out of here because Bobrovsky wanted to be a starter. With Leighton and Boucher, those guys are backups. They know they're backups. There's no threat there. So maybe he'll be relaxed and come in ready to play.
Play about 10 games of the season. Give Briz a little bit of a break.
Yeah, that's right. In this season, probably 10 games isn't going to be enough to do it.
Yep, that'll probably do it. The season opener, by the way, will feature the Philadelphia Flyers. And this is a nationally televised game. And I don't think based off of the last season's first round playoff matchups was probably one of the most entertaining of the eight matchups that were out there. They will open and host the Pittsburgh Penguins on NBC Saturday, January 19th at 3 p.m. Just a great way to kind of kick off. If you look at all the games throughout the calendar on opening night, which is Saturday the 19th, again, they're all rivalry games. Toronto, Montreal, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Islanders and the Devils, and I'm not sure who the Rangers pulled, but you look at some of these matchups, and they are all very intriguing, watchable matchups that should be pretty good. Ottawa, Winnipeg, Chicago, L.A., Rangers, Boston, Just Washington, Tampa Bay. So now you have Ovechkin going up against St. Louis, and
I'm curious to see what Ovechkin brings this season. Now that they have another change in coach and they've gone away from that
Oates.
From that defensive philosophy, and I don't know. I think I'm smelling a comeback here for Ovi. You know, he got married, maybe settled down a little bit with the.
He's had plenty of time to rest.
Yeah,
everybody has. Oh no, he went overseas.
No, he played in Russia. Yeah, he did. A lot of Russian guys, high level Russian. In fact, Kovalchuk's talking about not coming back, which is another issue.
Wow.
I don't know. We'll see if that what happens there.
Devils just signing Travis Zajac to a long term extension. It's saying that reports are saying that it's. $46 million over 8 years, which is about $5.75 million per season.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Well, they have to do something because they don't have Zach Parise.
They got enough money to spend now that they're not spending on Parise, right?
And that's going to take us off to our second break with our notable offseason moves, training camp, all that other fun stuff. When we get back from the break, very, very quickly go over third period predictions and other stuff. If you have any questions for us here at the Blue Line, feel free to tweet us your questions at Knights Radio if you're following us on Twitter. We're going to get off to our second break. When we get back from the break, third period prediction time right here on the Blue Line. You're listening to WSHS Sterling High School Radio.
Man, there's nothing good on the radio anymore. It's the same thing on every station.
Hey, not every station's like that. I just started following At Nights Radio on Twitter. They tweet news about the Sterling community and they have their own radio station.
But what makes them different?
Well, the whole station is run by students.
That's awesome, and I love Twitter. I'm going to go follow At Nights Radio right now.
Follow At Nights Radio on Twitter to receive news about sports, music, and everything Sterling.
Sterling High School is currently seeking high school and college students with Red Cross lifeguard certifications who would be interested in working as a lifeguard this spring at Sterling North, also known as the former Voorhees YMCA. Students will be compensated at a rate of $10 an hour. Interested students should submit an application, which is available in the general office at Sterling High School during the hours of 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. or call 856-784-1287. That's 856-784-1287.
Attention all Sterling High School community members. If you are a resident of Laurel Springs, Magnolia, Hinnell, Somerdale, Stratford, or if you have children who attend Sterling High School, the Sterling Board of Education invites you to enjoy the recently renovated state-of-the-art fitness center at Sterling High School. Hours of operation for the fitness center are as follow. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 5:30 a.m. through 7:30 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday, 7 p.m. through 9 p.m. If you are interested in using a fitness center, please send an email indicating what day and time you would like to attend with your name, address, and phone number to Mr. Matt Sheehan at msheehan@sterling.k12.nj.us or call 856-784-1333, extension 4701.
Welcome back to the Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. Rob Strauss alongside John Flacco. It's prediction time. It's the third period. And again, if you want to tweet us your predictions for this season, we'll archive them. We'll revisit them next week. And we'll also give you some shout outs. Send over your predictions or any questions that you have for us here at the Blue Line. You can tweet us at Knights Radio on Twitter, and we will be sure to address them for you. Each and every week here on the Blue Line. Here we go. Prediction time. We're going to look at divisional predictions right now. And with all the shakeups and all of the offseason moves and acquisitions and the people retiring and all this other stuff, let's take a look and see where everybody stands. We'll start off in the East with the Southeast Division. You have Carolina, Florida, Tampa Bay, Washington, and Winnipeg. two of the five teams were playoff teams last season.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a change up in that division more so than any. I like you said, we talked about Carolina a little bit having a chance. I think Washington will rebound and be more at the top of the standings. You know, I don't think you'll see the same thing from Florida. I think they kind of caught lightning in a bottle a little bit last year. You know, they came
Cape
out
of Cape Jersey, a run for their money.
They
though.
Did. I think that was just a matchup thing for them with the playoffs, but I don't know how much you're going to see out of them. Although they got good goaltending in the playoffs, so maybe that can carry them over as
is
well.
I think the big question mark in this division is this the year for Alex Ovechkin finally where they make it to a conference final or a cup final? Because that's what everybody's going to be talking about in this division. You could talk about Steven Stamkos all you want, and you could talk about the upstart Winnipeg Jets and maybe the Staal brothers in Carolina. Every team in this division has a pretty good story, but is this the year for Alex Ovechkin?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, 48-game season, maybe, like you said, maybe change in attitude, a little maturity. He comes in and plays all 48. If he could play to his best and comes to play every night in this short season, I think he can be that player this season. But, you know, Ovechkin, we know he takes time off. He takes time off in the season.
And it's not like they're playing one game every 3 days. There's games where you're playing three games in 4 nights. And it's gonna wear and tear on these players, especially because they're not in as good conditioning-wise as they would be had they had a full 82-game slate of games. Because usually you have 2 weeks of preseason games. At least 2 weeks of preseason games leading into the regular season. So now you have these teams that maybe kind of beat up a little bit, maybe a little tired once April rolls around, the tail end of the shortened season. So Southeast, I mean, you got to look. I like Tampa, and I think that they obviously fell well short of the playoffs last year. They finished, I believe, as two spots out. They finished in 10th.
Mm-hmm.
They were 8 points back of the 8th-place Ottawa Senators. So I think this is going to be a better year for them. And I almost a dark horse in that division a little bit, but I think Washington is obviously the clear-cut favorite there. Moving along to the Northeast Division, you have Boston, Ottawa, Buffalo, Toronto, and Montreal. Boston is without the services of Tim Thomas, who is sitting out this year as well. So they have put all their chips in the basket of their backup goaltender,
Tuukka
Rask.
Now, yeah, I'm not sold that he's going to be that guy just yet. I think we haven't heard the last thing with Thomas. I can't imagine. Well, maybe with that it's a shortened season. Maybe he will sit out the whole season. But if it was a normal season, I still can't picture him sitting out the whole entire season. So I think something has to happen there with him.
And you also have the youngcomers in the Ottawa Senators who made a nice, real nice run with the Rangers. Pushed the Rangers to 7 games in that opening quarterfinal matchup. So another team to look at there. Buffalo was only a couple points out of the last playoff spot,
yep,
3 points
missed.
Out. They just missed as well. So that division, I think, is very much up for grabs. Montreal is kind of in a tailspin. But, again, with a shortened season, you never know. I still think that Boston and Ottawa are the clear-cut favorites, as much as I hate to say it. Toronto, unless JVR, really, Toronto has no goaltending.
They have no GM. Well, they have a GM.
They have a GM, but they have no. They still have no the goaltending. Same goaltending.
Yeah.
They have Jamie Reimer and Ben Scrivens.
If you only won 35 games last year with that goaltending and you haven't gotten any better, I don't see how you're going to win any more.
Well, the thing with Toronto is, and I know this because that's like my team, they were in 6th place in the Eastern Conference in midway through February. And I was pleasantly surprised. And then from that point on, they went into a complete nosedive, and they wound up finishing, I believe, 13th in the Eastern Conference.
Only ahead of the Islanders and the Canadiens.
And not by much.
Nope.
They're 2 points away from the basement of the East. So I think changes are coming in Toronto, and hopefully they can get back in there. But I really still do think that Boston, Ottawa, and Buffalo are the teams to beat
maybe
in that division.
Maybe with a new GM, they'll get a deal done and get Luongo in there and try to make a turn for the better.
Arguably the toughest division in hockey, the Eastern Atlantic Division. You had the Rangers, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, New Jersey, and the Islanders. Islanders were only about 24 points away from the fourth place New Jersey Devils in that division. So it's obviously a four-horse race in that division. Rangers, as I mentioned earlier, I think are the clear-cut favorite, not only in the division, but also the conference.
Yeah, there are teams. The one thing about the Rangers that I look at is, can Lundqvist repeat last year?
He was unbelievable. He was unbelievable.
Which makes me think that that's not likely a scenario. I mean, I'm looking at Pittsburgh, really, to bounce back and be if a healthy Crosby and healthy Malkin all year, they're the team to beat in the East.
Okay.
Then the Rangers. Then, unfortunately, the closely behind the Flyboys.
And
the Flyers' defense is just not there yet.
I have a buddy of mine who's a huge Devils fan, and he was actually there when they won the Cup a number of years ago. And so he's one of the few diehards, if that's possible. And every year we talk about, where do you think the Devils are going to finish? It's like, and we always say, that's it for the Devils. They're done. Brodeur's, you know, he's had enough. This is Brodeur's 20th
back
season.
Again.
And he's back again. And I think this is the perfect season for Marty Brodeur. A 40-game season where he can play 30 of those games, or excuse me, not a 48-game season, or 50-game season, whatever. He can play two-thirds,
yeah,
if not more, still stay rested, and then he can hit his stride when he normally does, which is right around towards the
end
of the
regular
season.
If there's any goalie that will benefit the most from the shortened season, that's probably Marty Brodeur.
Marty Brodeur.
All they got to do is get in.
Just get to the dance. And that's the LA Kings are a good example of that. So I think all four of those teams again are playoff teams, same as last year. I can't see
no
them.
Reason
maybe
to think they're not.
The New Jersey with the lack of scoring, losing Parise is going to be a big factor. But Lou Lamoriello does a great job with that team. Just when everybody writes them off, he always finds a way to put them back into the conversation. So you can never really rule them out. But I still think the Rangers are the team to beat in the East. Going over quickly to the West, the Pacific Division. You have the reigning Stanley Cup champion Los Angeles Kings in a division where it's San Jose, Phoenix, Dallas, and Anaheim, and you can't not put L.A. As the number one team, not only in the West, but also in that division.
Yeah, I think he emerges at Kopitar, quick, you know, coming up to being one of the number one goalies in the league. They're certainly, you know, the team to beat. I think you'll see some of the normal powerhouses return. I think you'll see Detroit turn back around. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see St. Louis step up. Not so much in the regular season, but at least in the playoffs. I think Vancouver was very disappointed the way they finished last year. And
I don't think that they can afford any more seasons or postseasons like the ones that they've been having as of late, where they have this amazing regular season. They're talked about so much, and then they go to the playoffs, and they just sputter out.
I think a team like that kind of needs to look at themselves in the regular season and kind of figure out a way to do the little things that are going to get them far in the postseason and not worry about so much about, you know, just running through people in the regular season.
But let's be honest. L.A. was on an unbelievable run in the playoffs. They're the only team in NHL history to get into the playoffs as an 8 seed and defeat a 1, 2, and 3 seed. And not only on top of that, then go ahead and win the Stanley Cup. They could have played every single team in the league in a 7-game series, and they probably would have beat each team in 4 or 5 games.
How many games did they lose in the playoffs?
I think they only lost 3 or 4. Yeah, they lost 2 to New Jersey in the final. They swept St. Louis.
And that's the most.
I think they
lost one game against Phoenix, right?
I think they lost 2 to Phoenix.
Yeah, I think you're right. You might be right.
I think they lost 4.
Not in St. Louis.
They didn't. They swept St. Louis, and they took one from Vancouver.
Right.
And then they who was the other? The Detroit.
They opened up with Vancouver. They lost one game there. Then it was had to be St. Louis, right?
St. Louis swept St. Louis, and then they went to Phoenix. They lost 2 to Phoenix, I believe, and then they lost 2 to Devils. They only lost 5 games.
Yeah. I mean, that's you can't be more efficient.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So you'd have to look at them as being the clear-cut favorite in that division. I think it's going to be all the same teams. Look out for the young start Edmonton Oilers. A very, very young team.
Mm-hmm.
Last year had some really good stars on that team.
A lot of talent on that team.
And also Colorado as well with Landeskog. And they were only 7 points
so
out.
So if you're going to put Minnesota and Edmonton in, who's coming out from last year? San Jose?
I'm going to take Phoenix out.
Yeah, they got in as a division winner, so they could be backwards.
Yeah, I'm going to take Phoenix out.
They could go backwards.
And I will also take San Jose out. I think Minnesota, I think, is just going to propel. You got to bump two people out.
Right.
So I think youth is going to be served here. And I think the younger your lineup is with the shortened schedule, the more
well, how
benefit
about Nashville?
That you have.
Well, what does Nashville do?
Nashville, I mean, you still have your defenseman. You've still got the Pecorine in between the pipes. I still think it's a very, very good team. They had 104 points last year.
Right. But does Pecorine, again, goaltenders, is he the same exact
goaltender? Who gets hot? Who's going to win the NHL right. Stanley Cup? Is going to be the team that gets hot right around the end of March, early April, and gets their team into the playoffs and starts playing well at that point. If you can hang around from now until mid-March, stay in the mix, stay in contention, that's the team that's going to be the most dangerous, because that's exactly what the Kings did last year. Exactly what the Kings did.
Well, you know, the loss of Weber affects Rene.
Sure.
I mean, his numbers are what they are because of what he had in front of him. So
right.
He's going to come back.
So that's our divisional and conference. What we'll do, we will leave it where it is right now. We'll take a week to see how this first week of games or first set of games goes. We'll come back, and then we'll do our cup final predictions. And just so that we have them on record.
Okay.
For so we can
go back and laugh at ourselves like we did last time with our playoff predictions.
So we can do
wait, I think I had one team right, one series right in the whole playoffs, didn't I?
That's great.
Two.
I had a couple. I had a couple. But we'll take our professional and our expertise predictions and kind of put them to test, and then we'll come back in about 6 months and laugh at ourselves, which is always a good time. We would also like to hear your predictions as well as to what you think the NHL season is going to come out to be. Feel free to shoot us you could tweet us on Twitter.
That's right.
At Knights Radio, KNIGHTS Radio, and give us your predictions, and we'll discuss them on air and note them as well somewhere in our book here, and we'll come back and visit it and see if you're right. And if you're right, there may even be a Sterling Radio t-shirt in it for you.
Nice.
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 I'm putting the stakes up there. I'm doing it.
For future reference, another plug there, we're working on a little sort of website for the radio, for at least for the Blue Line show. We got a little space set up on the Sterling Athletic blog for the Blue Line podcast, so maybe we'll put some pictures up.
Sure.
Try to keep people updated for some upcoming schedule of our podcast, so they know when to tune in and when it'll be available. So we'll work on getting that up for you in the future during this season.
And I think last season we did the Blue Line every Monday. I believe it's 6 o'clock with the rebroadcast on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. This one, because it's obviously not Monday, we're recording this on a Wednesday. We will air this Thursday night. Starting at 7 p.m. We're going to probably...
Six o'clock.
6 o'clock, because there is basketball that will air at 7. So this will air at 6 o'clock, a rebroadcast probably sometime over the weekend as well. Just stay tuned to our Twitter page. Again, that's at Knights Radio, and to stay tuned for updates. And then we'll get back to our normal schedule, which is Mondays and Tuesdays next week. But I'd like to thank John. Thank you again. Great to have you back.
Great to be back,
great
baby.
To have hockey
Blue
back.
Line.
The Blue Line is back. That's going to do it for us here at the Blue Line.
I need a little cowbell. Bullhorn.
We need something. We need the hockey horn of the week.
We need hockey horn.
We got to get that back. But just thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll catch up with you next time on the Blue Line. For John Flacco, I'm Rob Strauss. We'll see you next time. Have a great night.